Welcome to Podcast by Cole's Orchestra Uncovered, a behind-the-scenes, under-the-covers look at the magic of the orchestra. Today, we are going under the covers to explore the role of the bassoon in the orchestra with our Pacific Chamber Orchestra's principal bassoonist, Carla Ekholm. Miss Ekholm is a critically acclaimed, prolific bassoonist performing all over the Bay Area, in San Francisco, Santa Rosa, and Marin. Her freelance tales are legendary, and she was one of a handful of musicians so featured in the documentary film, The Freeway Philharmonic. Miss Ekholm holds a Master's of Music degree from Temple University, and now, each summer, she teaches at the Eastern Music Festival in Greensboro, North Carolina. Her annual road trips back and forth enables her to camp, visit with colleagues at other music festivals such as Tanglewood, and especially to go hiking in the Grand Tetons. Welcome, Carla.
Hi, Lawrence. So happy to be here today.
Well, it's great to have you and actually have a conversation rather than just waving at you at the back of the orchestra there.
Exactly. Although, you know what? I have to say, Lawrence, you are unique amongst my conductors in that you frequently come back to us after the concert and congratulate us, which I find so very charming.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Well, let's go back to the very, very beginning and ask you about how you got going in classical music and on the bassoon. I mean, a kid doesn't typically wake up one morning and say, hey, Mom, Dad, would you get me a bassoon for my next birthday?
No, you're quite right. And in fact, I had no idea what a bassoon was. Like the typical young person in Texas, I had my instrument chosen for me by the local band director.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. The way they work it is they give you a test that tests whether you're tone deaf or have a good sense of pitch. And they literally steer the kids that do poorly on that test into art. And but I made a perfect score on that test. And so then they thought, in their minds, that meant I should probably play the horn or the oboe or the bassoon. Then the band director came to my elementary school and to meet us and look at our physical characteristics. And as the tallest girl in my class, he said, oh, the bassoon is going to be perfect for you. And so that's how I ended up playing bassoon. And in fact, they told me to, in June, I was supposed to come pick up the bassoon, and I had no idea how to even put it together, but I had all summer to figure it out.
Wow, that's an amazing story. And you know, so you started off on the bassoon, but obviously you grew to enjoy it. How did you decide to go from just sort of playing it in band in school and saying, I want to make a profession out of this?
Well, when I was 15, we moved to San Francisco, and that was a bit of a epiphany. In the first place, my 4 years playing bassoon in Texas, a small town there, Baytown, I didn't have a bassoon teacher all that time.
Oh.
And then I moved to San Francisco and ended up with the principal bassoonist of the San Francisco Opera and Symphony, Walter Green, as my teacher. So I had this fantastic teacher. Additionally, I was introduced to these amazing orchestras, the opera and the symphony. My dad took me early on when we moved here. He took me to the opera. And my very first opera was Das Rheingold. And it blew my mind away. It's this huge orchestra and the music's amazing. And then visually it was stunning. Like they were using lights and a scrim it looked like people were swimming on stage. That encouraged me to then apply to be a volunteer usher at the Opera House. For 2.5 years, I ushered both for the opera and the symphony because back then they shared the Opera House. I just was immersed in music, and I also went to a school that had a fantastic orchestra. It was before we had a performing arts school in San Francisco, and Lowell Orchestra was the orchestra where all the best musicians went. And in fact, we have a couple of people from my days at Lowell that now play in PCO. Being in this orchestra that people went on to have careers in music, Boston Symphony, New York Philharmonic, orchestra in Germany. I mean, we had members of the Lowell Orchestra there in the symphony and the opera and the ballet. So it was just part of the culture, and going to the symphony and opera just added to my enthusiasm.
So I guess that in your case, practicing was never really an issue.
Not at all. Now, my family was not all that keen on my practicing, so I had my little walk-in closet. It was basically 3 feet by 3 feet, and I would go in there, close the door, and they were happy to have me practice as much as I wanted.
So you got used to the small practice rooms that we find in all the colleges very early on, so it wasn't a big change for you.
Exactly.
A bassoon obviously gives us the low notes that we need to have in the wind section. How would you describe the different ranges on the bassoon? You know, how do composers decide what to write, how to write for a bassoon?
Well, the bassoon changes from octave to octave. When you get in the very highest octave, the tone becomes less distinctive. It's, you know, the classic of the Rite of Spring where, you know, is that an English horn? It could even be a flute. It just starts to sound like it could be any instrument. But as you go down, you go to the lowest notes, then you get the really characteristic sound of the bassoon.
Okay. And are there any sort of like really unusual techniques that the bassoon does? I mean, I have seen, you know, a piece of paper sticking out of the edge of the bassoon to get it to get one note lower. But is there any other techniques that composers will make use of?
Yes. And in fact, yeah, I should say the main composer that does that one note lower with a piece of paper is Mahler. And he drives us nuts when he tries to have us play our very lowest note followed by one pitch lower, because you can't get a piece of paper in quickly enough. But but besides which, my favorite little special technique is called multiphonics. And it's where you get, you know, take a basic fingering and then lift a finger, and then you get this weird sort of, you know, rattling around of a couple of pitches. I think it's very cool, and it's particularly effective in the low register of the bassoon, I think.
Can you play us a little bit of that?
Oh, definitely. Here's two of my favorites.
Wow. So let's talk about what is expected of a bassoonist in an orchestra. And I think probably the easiest way to do that is, you know, when one wants to become a member of the orchestra, there are usually, and there's an opening, there's usually an audition. Hundreds of people applying, which then are behind a screen and then gradually work down to semifinals and finals before someone is picked. So there's certain standard excerpts that are chosen for these auditions. What are a couple of them, and what do they show about them that are of particular interest?
I will just say the most standard excerpt for bassoon, and it's the excerpt that is on every single audition I have ever taken. And not only that, it is always the first excerpt, and that's Marriage of Figaro. And they tend to use that as a way of just weeding out people. It just shows, can you just basically play the instrument? And there are various versions of, you can play a longer version. I will just do the excerpt in its essence, which is just 8 bars.
Well, That's making the, I see what you mean about playing the instrument. You got to move through those notes really quickly.
Then another excerpt that tests the player's ability to have response and flexibility is Peter and the Wolf.
Oh,
not only, and not only does it test your ability to get out the low notes, but additionally, it tests your accuracy of rhythm with the dotted eighth and 16th note rhythm. And also, it keeps hitting one of our notes. It's an F sharp that has a tendency to crack on the ba-dum, 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 ba-dum. So Peter and the Wolf hits a lot of different things, and so it shows up on audition.
Yeah, that's one of my favorites. It's really great to hear that. And you know, what's interesting about these excerpts, even though you played sort of the shorter version of Marriage, is they are all short. I mean, typically an audition is like 5 minutes long. They've got so many people to go through. That's really intense. You've got a lot to show and a lot to prove, if you will, in a very short amount of time in just a few notes. That's actually indicative of the kind of intensity and pressure, if you will, in terms of playing at every single moment in an orchestra, because it's got to come out right. On a good day, on a bad day, a good read or a bad read, it's still got to come out every day just exactly right.
Yes. And it's interesting. I've been on both sides of the screen as someone taking the audition, and then I've also been on the panel listening. We have to make just snap judgments so quickly. And if you've got 60, 80, 100 people, there just isn't time to let someone play too much. But we do like to give them maybe the exposition of their concerto and then maybe 4 excerpts at least.
Yeah, quite a challenge. So let's go to the orchestra itself here. So the bassoon has a unique position in the orchestra in terms of giving the bass line along with the string bass on the one hand, and the bottom of the harmony, and then on the other hand, also on occasion having a nice solo to play as well. And I'm wondering, you know, how do you see your role in the orchestra, and is it different in a smaller group like our chamber orchestra versus a larger orchestra? How do you relate to the other instruments in terms of blending and things like that?
Well, I think the bassoon in both the larger setting and the smaller setting, it's used a lot for its color. I can't tell you how often I tell a person that I play bassoon and they say, oh, I love the sound of the bassoon. And it seems that composers do too. In a big orchestra, they also like to explore the extremes of the instrument up in the very, very high register. They also like to just show off the instrument all by itself in a very exposed solo, whereas it's a little different in a chamber orchestra. Oftentimes, the bassoon is used at the octave to the violins playing the melody, adding color, but not quite so soloistic.
Oh, that's interesting. And of course, in Baroque music, the bassoon is used to play along with the harpsichord and the cembalo, the string bass part as well, to add that color and basis to the sound. You get that interesting blend between the harpsichord, the string bass, cello, and the bassoon.
Yes, exactly. And it also just adds a little weight, which we don't need quite so much in modern times, but back then they wanted the extra substance of the bassoon.
Yeah, very true. Playing orchestra music, every conductor does things differently. You know, you've seen me do things and say, let's try this or let's try that. And I think it might be interesting for people to get a sense from you of what kind of things do you need to do differently when you have a conductor present with you different interpretations?
Well, one of the first things is a bassoon is a wind instrument. So if it's substantially slower and a long excerpt, let's say the end of the slow movement of Tchaikovsky 4, mm-hmm. I've had conductors take that insanely slow. So I need to prepare myself and just make sure that I'm able to get through that comfortably. It's a little bit of training, like an athlete. You just have to know, okay, I've got to blow for this long. So you start working on it before the performance. And then additionally, besides the breathing, sometimes if it's a faster tempo, I might change the character. Maybe that seems a little more like a lilt and I'll lift somewhere where as if it's a slower tempo on something, maybe it seems more expressive. And bassoon is one of those instruments that does use vibrato. So I might use my vibrato to add to that expressiveness.
Yeah, there's a lot of flexibility that's possible. And as a professional, you have to know when it's presented to you in different ways, how you can make it sound the best. It takes a lot of experience to get there. It's not just a matter of learning the instrument. It's a matter of learning and being able to have all sorts of tools at your disposal in order to make a different interpretation come out to sound the best it can come out.
Yes. And I have to say, I'll be interested to know what you think as a conductor, but what I've noticed in the 40 years I've been performing professionally is that conductors are starting to think that faster is better. And I find that, like Marriage of Figaro that I played earlier, the tempo on that is just getting faster and faster.
Yeah, you know, that's because I think people get so used to hearing it. You know, when you get used to hearing something over and over again, you tend to wind up just kind of going faster to make it sound interesting. It's like pitch. You know, the orchestras start at 440, and as time goes on, they gradually wind up going a little higher and a little higher. I mean, San Francisco Symphony is like 442 and a half. Oh. And it gives that extra little edge to the sound.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that over time, things just do tend to get faster, do tend to get a little higher to keep the excitement going. But then what happens, I think, too, is once people get used to it getting faster and faster, then suddenly someone decides to take it slower and it becomes now a novel interpretation.
Well, I'm waiting for the slow trend to come back.
I don't think in marriage it ever will.
Okay.
Yeah, that one just is just meant to go quickly. What can I say? Yeah, and speaking about sort of experiences like that, and you know, this doesn't have to do with bassoon technique, but you've been with PCO for over 20 years, and I'm kind of wondering, just in general, has there been anything that sort of stuck out in your memory as being something that was different or unique or special?
Yes. It goes way back to one of my first years with the orchestra. We had a bandoneon soloist.
Oh, yeah.
His name was Daniel Benelli, I believe. So there were several things that made this so memorable for me. In the first place was, just a few years before, there was a movie called Il Postino that used a lot of bandoneon in the soundtrack. And it was a sound I hadn't ever heard. And I fell in love with that sound. It was back when we had cassettes. And I just about wore out my cassette listening to that soundtrack. And then you had this bandoneon soloist, and he played Piazzolla. I was blown away. I was not familiar with Piazzolla. And so then suddenly I was on a roll with Piazzolla. Now we were up to CDs and I was listening to my Piazzolla CDs. Additionally, I will say a little side note about when we had Danielle Benelli play with us. It seems that no one else could really communicate with him, and his English was not great. So I remember sitting back in the green room using my just not great Italian skills. Somehow we could communicate with him, you know, understanding my Italian, which was not his language, but he could understand that better than he could understand English. So I really enjoyed getting to know him that way.
Yeah, he flew up from Argentina. It was a real coup to have him join us. He brought up his own arrangements, and I can also see why he would be been very attractive for you, because of the rhythm is so critical to the tango, and the bassoon really adds a lot of flavor to that. So it's one of those kind of really meaty and interesting things that you really sink your breeds into.
Yes, exactly. Well, I was also going to say, this was not PCO, but I have to share with you another really incredible memory. And that's that I got to play in the orchestra with Leonard Bernstein conducting. And he was conducting Prokofiev 5, which is like the perfect marriage of conductor and piece. So that was another, you know, one of those outstanding things in my musical memory. I will mention that we've been talking about me as a bassoonist. When I played for Bernstein, I was actually playing contrabassoon, which is an instrument I've only played a handful of times in my life. It's big and a big stretch for my hands. So that also made that performance pretty unusual for me.
Oh, absolutely. This past year, we've all been hunkered down with the COVID pandemic and not being able to do too much in the way of live performances. And, you know, we've been having more time to research, if you will, or expand our horizons in certain ways. And how have you been spending your time? What have you been up to?
Well, I have to say, I am, of course, a COVID cliche in that I'm nurturing a sourdough starter named Ruth, and I'm fostering for the SPCA. I currently have a little chihuahua with a broken leg named Paisley. Yes, she's just outside my studio right now. Sweetest thing ever. But besides these non-musical ventures, I made it a goal when the pandemic started and I could see orchestra after orchestra stopping my work. I found myself with a fair amount of extra time. And so I really wanted to do something that would be productive. In normal life, I make my bassoon reeds, but in recent years, I had been getting a little lazy and ordering my cane so that it had already been profiled, which means scraped on the outside, and shaped, just because it's a little bit of a physical process making a reed from the scratch. And so I had, from 40 years of collecting cane, I had drawer after drawer of cane that needed to be turned into blanks. Blank is like a word for what the reed is before we cut the tip and scrape it so that it'll play. So I made it my goal. I had, I don't know, 150 pieces of cane. Every single week, I would make 12 blanks, put them away. And finally, I came to the day that I have no more cane. I am never making another blank in my life. And I proudly proclaimed that to our second bassoonist in PCO, Carla Wilson. And she nodded her head. And then she brought me over a big bag of cane that she said, "Yeah, it's not all that good, but I'm never going to do anything with it. Here, you can have it." So I am now back to making blanks, and I maybe by May I will never have to make another blank in my life.
You'll have enough reads to last you forever.
Oh, I'm convinced. Yes.
And, you know, it's interesting because Kane ages and, you know, just like myself on the clarinet, I find that if I buy reeds and I let them sit for a couple of years before I use them, they play a lot better and the sound is a lot better.
You know, it's funny you mention that because years ago in your introduction for me, you mentioned that I got my master's from Temple University. Well, when I left and moved to Philadelphia, I had an adult student that I said, you know, this is not great cane, but here, you can have it. And so then I came back from Philadelphia and she started studying with me and she said, you know, Carla, truth is, I am just never going to make another blank. You can have your cane back. Well, what I discovered was that cane that I thought was not very good, I don't know, 30 years ago or more, turns out some of it's pretty good now. You let it age for 30 years and it gets better.
Wow. Wow. So musically, what have you been up to musically? Have you done any specific things that you wanted to conquer over this break time?
Well, yes. There is an etude book that came, etude book, we think of it as an etude. It's a series of 16 waltzes. I had never learned them when I was in school because they were actually written after I had graduated. I decided I would get this book of waltzes by Mignone and would start learning these things that I had never done, and everyone else was talking about them. So that's my current project.
Oh, wow. That's really interesting. So, you know, I think would love to hear you play a couple of pieces. Do you have one from there that you could play for us?
Yes, I have one that's called Mysterio. It's like mystery. What I like about it is it shows off the entire range of the bassoon, all the way from low B flat. And for those of you who care, that B flat is two half steps below the low C of a cello. And so from that low B flat all the way up to our high E, and that's a step above the highest note in Rite of Spring. It's quite an amazing range. I think it's a lovely little waltz. And what's great about it is it was written for bassoon.
You know, a lot of times Bach is done on various different instruments. There are some really nice pieces of Bach that I think do fit really well on the bassoon. Is there one that you could play for us that would be a nice contrast to the waltz?
Yes, I like in the suite number one, there's a courant. It just lies right in the middle register of the bassoon. And it gives you a sense of a little more technique and a little more movement and just sort of a nice graceful dance from the bassoon. I will say the one thing is the difference from playing the Mignone and then playing the Bach is that Bach did not intend for a wind player to be playing this. And so he didn't really cut us any breaks on the breathing. So as this particular piece goes on, you might notice me gasping for breaths a little more audibly.
Well, Carla, it's been wonderful being able to explore and chat with you about the orchestra. And we're going to sign off with Carla's performing these two works. It'll be the Mysterio followed by the Courant. Thank you so much, Carla.
Oh, thank you, Lawrence.
Thank you. Thank you.